Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Doing great. Feeling good.
Somebody had his Wheaties this morning. Want to ask everybody who's listening out there in podcast land right now, I need you to do the Restaurant Guys a favor. I want you to send us an email. Send it to francis@restaurantguysradio.com or mark@restaurantguysradio.com. Let us know where you live. Let us know how often you listen and whether you like the show or not. We're just trying to reach out to podcast land and find out where everybody is who's listening.
We want to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Even if you're listening live, we want to hear from you.
Yeah, or if you're listening live, we want to hear geographically. We have so many people. We have people in Australia who've recently visited the restaurant from Australia, from Canada, from Chicago, from California. We have people who write to
Texas,
us from England all
Oklahoma.
The time. Texas and other countries. we're trying to map out where our listeners are, and I think it'd be kind of cool. We may even put that up on the website. We have a international following now, and I think it's pretty cool. So email francis@restaurantguysradio.com.
Mark@restaurantguysradio.com is actually shorter, so
yeah.
You can email me.
You can do that either way. So let us know if you're listening, and if there's anything you want to hear us talk about that you haven't heard us talk about yet. We get a lot of our ideas from listener email. I got an email from a woman who ran something called the Pinot Noir Camp. Pinot Noir Camp is in Oregon. It's run by an Oregon Council of Wine Makers, and they bring people in the business to Oregon to stay.
Really sounds like the kind of camp that you would go to.
Yeah, I'm a dork, aren't I? But a lot of my friends have been, you know, it's been going on for years.
I went to a camp. We had horseback riding. We learned how to shoot a bow and arrow. What'd you do at camp, Francis?
We drank Pinot Noir. All different kinds, though. We had lunch on the vineyard. It was lovely. It's a pretty intensive seminar, and most important people in the business have gone to it. Mark, of course, hasn't been invited.
That's because it's Pinot Noir.
Yeah, that's true, because you were horseback riding and doing archery. Anyway, I got an email from someone who was involved with Pinot Noir Camp in the past, and Oregon is a great place to visit. Portland is a wonderful food town. It's a wonderful city. And the wines coming out of Oregon are great, and the wines coming from Washington, the whole Pacific Northwest, are amazing. But out in wine country in Oregon, there's a little town called McMinnville. And McMinnville is a picturesque little town with a little hotel right in the middle of it, a very old hotel that's been restored. I think it's called the McMinnville Inn or something like that. I'll put a link up on the website. You can link to it. And if you ever want to go away somewhere, go into a little town. It's not like Napa and Sonoma.
And what we mean by away is away.
Away. But there's like a little park in town. You're right by the valley and the mountains. You're close to a lot of wineries. And I love this little hotel, and they have a rooftop bar if you go in the fall or the winter or fall or the summer or the spring. And we had a great time. Pinot Noir Camp is a great thing if you're in the industry. Someone wrote me a letter. I was sort of, must have been on her mass emailing list, Danielle Andrus Montelieu from Selena Sellers. Please pardon this mass email, but I have an opportunity for one lucky individual. Laurent Montelieu and I are looking for a general manager for our beautiful new wine bar in downtown McMinnville. We're hoping you can help, blah, 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 blah. Well, here you are, the free plug on the Restaurant Guys radio show. You're getting the free plug, however, because it was 2 o'clock in the morning when this thing popped through on my email, and I wrote her back, Dear Danielle, I sometimes dream of selling my restaurants and moving to McMinnville. It's not really an option for me right now, but I just let you know that in my fantasy, I take this job. Now, I thought that was really humorous until the next day I came in and I got an email from her. Dear Francis, in my fantasy, you take this job.
You know, Francis, what neither of you know is, in my fantasy, you take that job, too.
So if anyone's looking to be the general manager of a wine bar in McMinnville, you can email her at Danielle, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E, at selenasellers.com, or you can call her at 503-852-0082.
Unless I can get Francis to take that job and leave the East Coast.
We can do my conference call, one to the other. And so we'll put that up on the website as well. McMinnville, by the way, an out-of-town place. where there's some good restaurants in McMinnville, a walking town. They also have a little hobby shop with a lot of remote control airplanes. Evidently, that's really big out in McMinnville.
I really think you should go. That's the restaurant guy. I'm Mark Pascal. And
all right.
Francis is in McMinnville.
Organizers of the 4th annual Turkey Testicle Festival can keep their name despite concerns about the propriety of the word and the island's virtue. The Fort Myers Beach Council voted 4-1 Monday to allow the surf club bar to use the TTF name after a laugh-out-loud discussion at the council meeting.
Really not going to that one, though. Sorry, I got a lot of festivals, a lot of, you know,
Councilman Charles Meter said, this year's festival will be the 4th annual and went on to list more than 12 other cities in the country that host annual events with that name. which, more than the negativity of our recent elections, makes me wonder what the heck is wrong with our country.
What are we thinking?
They actually serve the delights at the TTF. Here's the deal, though. Mayor Dennis Babak said, "Who cares what the name is? The money's going for charity anyway." So you know, the festival in Fort Myers has raised $3,000 last year for the Harry Chapin Food Bank. Harry Chapin is a hero of mine. The folk singer was founded World Hunger Year under President Carter in the 1970s and was very active in food charities.
You know, Francis, I am a big fan of, and we've been proponents of this for a long time. We're really big fans of, you know, using the whole animal. When you kill an animal and you're going to eat it, or I really believe in using the whole thing.
Some of it can be used for cat food.
Some of it we'll just call waste. How about that? Yeah, we just call some of it waste. And
anyway, they fry up the little delights, and we're going into the Thanksgiving season. Thought that might be something you want to know about.
Okay. Yeah. Open. I'm very open-minded. Yeah. I'm not eating them.
No.
Sorry.
I got to tell you something. The thing about Harry Chapin is, I don't know if any of you, I mean, of course, a lot of our listeners know who Harry Chapin is. He wrote Taxi in the 70s. He actually had a 10-year career. There's a lot of poetry in his career, and he died in a car accident on the Long Island Expressway in the early 80s, 81, I think, 82, something like that. I had tickets to the Harry Chapin concert at the Garden State Arts Center for, like, the week or two thereafter, and I was going with, like, 10 of my friends.
Oh.
And I remember when he died, he really was he was the guy that I listened to a lot when I was 13, 14, 15 years old. And what I think is really great is, in a way, Harry Chapin brings us together, Mark. Do you know how Harry Chapin brings us together?
I shudder to find out why.
See, for Mark, all of life is a song cue, you know? Anything is the beginning of a song. But for songs before 1986, is it, Mark?
It is about 1986.
He knows the lyrics to these songs, and while he can't sing on key, he gets the lyrics right. Anything after 86, he doesn't have any idea what the lyrics are.
Yeah.
But that doesn't keep him from singing, so he sings anything that rhymes with what the lyrics are.
I'm very creative.
So I like it. it doesn't tell a story. It's just a series of sounds that rhyme. So I do like it when you sing Harry Chapin songs because you actually can sing them together because you sing the real words.
Because I was going to learn to fly.
All right, Turkey Testicle Festival. You can find out about it. We'll put a link up to it on our website. Despite your objections, Fort Myers, maybe go down there and
Antoinette Bruno instead of talking
okay.
about this
Coming
anymore.
Up, we have from the website starchefs.com, which is a very important website for those of us in the industry. Lots of great news on starchefs.com. Antoinette Bruno is the founder and the CEO, and she also is the editor. And we're going to talk to her about a recent letter that she wrote about the Michelin Guide. And we'll talk to her about restaurant reviews in New York and in the country in general. You'll hear that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Today, we're being joined again by our friend Antoinette Bruno. Her website, starchefs.com, has become invaluable to the industry, and for those of you who are consumers and want to be in the know on what's going on in the restaurant business overall, you should check out Antoinette's website. And we're here to talk about a letter that she wrote, a letter from the editor, and we're going to talk about restaurant reviewing overall.
Antoinette, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you. And
Mark, it's the third time.
It's the third time.
Number three. It's number three. And that doesn't count the number of ideas that we've stolen over the years.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, too.
You've really been with us 10 or 12 times now, Antoinette.
You know what's hysterical is one of the reasons that We started this radio show. I remember we started, oh, it's over a year and a half ago now. We have over 300 shows online available for you to listen to.
Incredible.
And they sat down with us, because we're 5 days a week. That's a lot of content, right? And it's, you know, each one is a discrete idea. And they sat down with us, we sat down with the radio guys, and they said, well...
We don't do discreet very well,
though,
do we?
They said, not that kind of discreet. And they said, come up with, what would you do? What would a food show, could you come up with that many different topics? And Mark and I said, hold on a second, give me a minute. And we took like 15 minutes, and we handed back a sheet of paper with 40 topics on it.
40 ideas.
But we get those ideas because we are voracious readers. And I'm surprised, and I think a lot of people would be surprised at how much of running a restaurant or running a couple of restaurants is sitting at a desk and reading about it.
But I do think a lot of people knew we were voracious.
Like, yeah, we're all voracious eaters. But Star Chefs is a great kind of, they call it a portal or to a lot of different, you know, books and authors and things that come out. Your letter to the editor in the October issue of Star Chefs, you talked about a panel that Star Chefs moderated on the Michelin Guide. And for those in our audience who don't know, the Red Book, the Guy Michelin, the Michelin Guide, the Michelin Red Book, these are all different names for the most important food rating in Europe, and their highest level of stars that they give. You can be to be listed in Michelin at all is a compliment. One star, it's a serious restaurant.
I mean, it's the guide that every, I think, serious restaurant person uses when they go to Europe.
Two stars is an extraordinary restaurant, and three stars from the Michelin Guide in a country like France, we don't even have restaurants like that, really. We have maybe one or two in the country. I mean, restaurants where lunch is, you know, $500 in an all-day affair, and you see why, you know. Well, Michelin came to New York in 2006, and it's our impression that there was a lot of hype about it when it was released, but nobody in New York's reading it. And their 2007 guide is about to come out, and Michelin landing in New York had some great implications for changing the way that other publications rate restaurants. And I think the thing that you talked about, Antoinette, that was most interesting to us is the question is, does Michelin matter in New York? A year later, does Michelin matter?
It was funny because I was grappling for a title for my letter from the editor. And I just blurted it out, and I'm like, does Michelin matter? You know, and everybody said, yes, that's the title.
Yeah, that's it.
And now it's the first question of our interview with you.
But you know what, and I don't know that I have, I mean, in a way, yes, in a way, no, but it's a very important question. This is a guide that internationally is maybe the most important guide around. But, you know, to some people it matters a lot, and to some people it's like, who cares what Michelin thinks? What are your thoughts?
I think a couple of things came out. I mean, when I got the call, which was about 2 weeks before the panel, I got the call asking me to moderate the panel. It wasn't my idea to put the panel on. Somebody called me and said, would you like to moderate this panel? And my first question was, well, is this a PR ploy to promote Michelin, or can I, you know, ask real questions and, you know, can I explore Michelin? And I was told I had free rein to ask anything I wanted. And so I said, fine, I'd do it. And I had some good restaurant critics on my panel. Which I thought was interesting. And I had a restaurateur, Barry Wine, who's always a lot of fun to have on panels.
For your next panel, Mark and I have a lot of fun on panels.
Plug. Oh, good, okay.
Just plug out there, sorry. But anyway,
well,
go ahead.
I'll remember that. Right. So Brian Miller, you know, was the critic on the New York Times for, I guess, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Pascal Lederler was a critic also from the Daily News. And it was interesting to hear their opinions on how they rated restaurants. That's how I actually began the panel. I asked them, you know, what their typical visit was like and how many times they visited a restaurant and what was their criteria. And we also explored the whole concept of, which I think is an important one for a restaurant critic, is whether you're someone knows you're there or doesn't know that you're there, because I think that is actually the one important key thing that Michelin has over everyone else, is that no one knows who the
anonymity.
Michelin inspectors are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, and the thing is, purportedly the New York Times restaurant critic is also anonymous, but you know what? There's only one of him or her.
Correct.
And it doesn't take too long. I mean, restaurants hire private investigators to find out who they are. And if any restaurant worth its salt has a picture of the New York Times restaurant critic in the kitchen somewhere, and everybody
right.
sees it, you know.
Well, that's what Brian said, basically. You know, he said, you know, I know that, you know, after you know, so many months of when I started, everyone had my picture everywhere. So I definitely think that that is the case. So that is one thing in the favor of Michelin.
Well, you know, we're gonna come back in a moment and talk about anonymity for restaurant critics and how it's harder for a local publication with one critic to manage that. And what are the real upsides that come with that? With Antoinette Bruno, she's the editor, the founding editor of StarChefs.com and one of our favorite commentators on the food business. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally. She's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn. And on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance. One of the best jazz singers in the country. Two of the best restaurants in the state. An evening not to be forgotten. Go to StageLeft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis, Stage Left, and Catherine Lombardi. Our guest is Antoinette Bruno. She is the editor of StarChefs.com, a lovely publication that is pretty much for the industry, and it also comments on the industry. And we're talking about the Michelin Guide, which is the French guide that has come to rate New York restaurants, versus more homegrown publications like the New York Times, where sometimes often the critic, after working for a short time, is recognized. The Michelin Guide is able to retain anonymity because they employ professional critics, a number of them, and they come in unbeknownst to the restaurateur.
So what did people like Brian Miller say about the importance of anonymity?
Well, he said that it couldn't change what the chef had on the menu that day. He made reservations in many people's names, so they never knew he was coming before he actually arrived. And he always came in big groups of, you know, sort of 8 to 12 people. And they ordered enough dishes so that there would be no way to give, you know, tremendous special treatment. And he also said that he would always be the last person to arrive in the group, so that where the group was sat and how they were treated, you know, would have no reflection on him because they didn't know he was walking in the door.
But Michelin doesn't have this problem.
The waiter they were assigned.
Exactly. And he said, you know, often when he walked in the door, then they'd try to move the table, and, you know, he would say, absolutely not. You know, this is where we're sitting.
I'm sitting right here in the doorway where you put my mother. So did he think that Michelin really had an advantage with anonymity, or no? He felt he was able to mute that advantage.
No, I think he agreed that they did have an advantage in that.
I think that one of the great fantasies that we all have, and one of the reasons we like to read restaurant reviews, and I think one of the reasons that negative restaurant reviews sell more papers than positive restaurant reviews, is because we've all been in the situation where we've been mistreated at the hands of someone. Mm-hmm. And we think, oh, if I were only the New York Times restaurant critic and could make you pay for this.
When Patrick O'Connell from the Unit Little Washington was on the show, he talked about the restaurant scars that diners have from those moments.
See, I have a very different opinion. I don't think negative reviews help anyone.
They help sell papers. That's all I said.
I think it's a really bad practice. I think that if you you don't have anything great to say about a restaurant, why write about it at all?
Oh, wow. We totally disagree. I found something we totally disagree on. And we're restaurateurs. We're served up at the fire. We have to go to the news because there's some interesting news out there we have to hear about. But we'll come back in just a moment. And then Antoinette Bruno and I are going to have a fight. It's going to be cool. All right. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Antoinette Bruno. Antoinette Bruno is the founding editor of starchefs.com, which is a great website you should check out. I think they're geared toward restaurant professionals, but there's a lot of great information if you're a food head, like so many of you listening to this show are, because you could be listening to a sports show right now. Antoinette and Mark and I were talking about before the news, a panel she recently hosted with Brian Miller of the New York Times, restaurateur Barry Wine, and Jean-Luc Nere from the Michelin Guide, about restaurant reviews overall, and particularly whether this French guide, the Michelin Guide, is important or has had any impact on New York.
So, Antoinette, just before the break, you incorrectly stated that there should be no restaurant reviews that are negative.
Well, no. What Antoinette said.
Let me defend my statement.
Wait.
Okay?
Let me rephrase it without the charged language. If you weren't listening before the show, what Antoinette said was she doesn't think that negative restaurant reviews really have any value to anybody. And frankly, why would you review a bad restaurant if you don't have anything nice to say? Why do you say anything at all? And Mark and I are of the opinion.
We grew up in very different households, I think.
call it like you and me. Call it like you see it. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah,
so defend your point.
Let me tell you why I say what I say,
okay.
and then you can comment.
Okay.
What I have a problem with is the restaurants open a week, 5 weeks, three
sure.
weeks.
Yes.
6 weeks, and a restaurant critic goes in and blasts the hell out of the restaurant. And the chef, I mean, unless you're a chef at a huge restaurant group that has buku amount of bucks and can spend, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months, preparing service before you're even open, right? And
yes.
You have the luxury of lots of money to have your entire back of the house staffed in several months before you open. You don't have any time to get your act together.
Right,
and
totally
for a
agree.
Restaurant critic to go in and blast a restaurant before they've ever had a chance to get their sea legs and serve a good meal, I think that you can basically decimate a chef and
that's
decimate
right.
a restaurant so that they never even get a chance.
I'll tell you something. We completely agree. And when we opened Stage Left, nobody knew who the heck we were, right? So in 92. So fortunately, we had 4 or 5 months before the New York Times came to visit us. Thank heaven, right? And we've worked out a lot of mistakes in that period of time. And we got 2 stars from the Times. And then another few years went by and they came back again and we got 3 stars from the Times. This is in Stage Left. And we've retained those stars on a couple of occasions since. So I agree that if they had come in the first month, we wouldn't have gotten any stars. We would have gotten 1 star. We were learning how to do it.
But just as an example, I mean, Catherine Lombardi got some pretty good reviews out of the gate. But you know,
we opened like this.
But we didn't open. I mean, we tried to open like that. But, you know, we got reviewed in those first couple of months by a couple of different publications. And
Were you ready?
No, we weren't. Okay, for that kind of review, we weren't ready. Yes, we got good reviews. But was the restaurant performing the way I want the restaurant to perform?
The way it performs now?
The way it performs now? It, absolutely not.
Well, and here's where we agree. I think that there's a desire to scoop you don't want to be the third publication to review a restaurant. You want to review the new place, and that's one
right.
way to sell papers. But also, I think there is a time and a place for negative reviews. Frankly, it's my impression that when consumers pick up a publication, and there have been many in New Jersey, and they're, you know, promoting this county or that county or this lifestyle or that lifestyle, and they only have positive things to say about restaurants, the consumer throws it down and thinks, ah, it's just crap. It's just an advertisement.
Fluff.
It's just an advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think that I'll point to 2 examples where negative restaurant reviews have done good. I think when Ruth Reichel first came to New York, she wasn't known because she started reviewing before it was known that Brian Miller would leave and she would become the New York Times restaurant critic. And she visited Le Cirque, which had had 4 stars forever, and used to treat regular customers like the King of England, and used to treat you, if you didn't have a check next to your name in the reservation book, like you were a peon, and used to actually give you different food. Well, she visited 1.5 times with them not knowing who she was, and she visited 2.5 times with them knowing who she was.
How half a time?
They recognized her at dessert. Did you not read this? Have you not heard of this review? It's amazing. It's called.
Her book, Garlic and Sapphires. I recommend you get the book because it's a great insight into this whole process.
It was a double length review, and she took a star away from them, and she wrote, "My dinner at Le Cirque, the 2 views of Ruth Reichel, dinner as an unknown diner, dinner as a most favored patron." And she basically wrote 2 reviews. And in the end, she said, listen, if you can't get a check next to your name in the reservation book, save your $95. And when she saw Cirio Maccone, the maitre d', recognize her, someone whispered in his ear, he looked over her at her with horror in his eyes, because she used to wear disguises, and she went dressed as like a dowdy kind of a woman. He looks over, and the whole thing changes around, and what she said was, a little raspberry tart with the most pathetic little raspberries that almost looked like raisins was being dropped in front of me. She didn't get her fork into it before it was whisked away as Cirio came over to the table and was replaced with the most beautiful raspberry tart she'd ever seen.
Yeah, the two sets of raspberries, one for the critics and one for everybody else.
Well, one's for the VIPs and one's for not. I think that review changed New York dining. Because all of a sudden people said, wait a second, the New York Times restaurant critic's going to come in disguise? I have to treat, and I think
I only have to have one set of raspberries. What am I going to do now?
I think that it made it a more egalitarian. That was one of the things that made service in New York better and nicer. Was that?
Well, then there need to be standards. There needs to be a restaurant shouldn't be visited before it's open 5 months.
Oh, I agree with that.
And why not a negative review in a restaurant's first year? If you don't have anything to say, don't say anything at all.
See, now we agree.
You know,
why not start the reviews after the first year?
You know what I think? I think we gave you too much time to think about it. So you could come over to my side.
I was looking forward to a fight, and we got nothing.
That news break, really.
Well, I don't know.
Really...
I am always announced when I go to visit a chef and I do a tasting. And they know about me coming usually a month or before I get there. And I have rules for my visit. They can serve me only 5 dishes. Mm-hmm. 3 have to come off the current menu. 2 can be anything the chef wants. Because I'm actually there to write about the chef, not the restaurant.
Well,
and I want the chef to strut. I want him to show me his stuff.
I think there's a huge difference there, and I think there's a value in. But you're a journalist who writes about food. You're there to write an article about a thing. You're not a critic. A critic's job is to pass judgment and to step in our shoes, or to step in the customer's shoes and walk in, hopefully, in the customer's shoes. And if you look at the history of the Michelin Guide in France, one of the reasons it became so popular was the critics used to go in and accept free meals and take bribes, and, well, that's so does the rest of France and everything. But but the Michelin Guide, they were known to have great integrity, and they were well-paid, and that was how they achieved their niche in France. But I think
we should talk about what their issues are in the U.S. because I agree with you that they do have integrity and they're a well-respected guide. And I do truly believe that most fine dining chefs and restaurateurs think it's the Bible.
Yeah, but the consumers aren't reading it. Why don't we talk about that? What are their problems in the United States? Because I have my own ideas.
I think the number one problem is the lifespan of a restaurant, specifically in New York.
Yeah.
Their first city to rate, and I think they're going to have the same issue in San Francisco, is significantly shorter than anything they've come across in any other country where they've had a Michelin guide.
Great. And, I mean, you're talking about what great restaurants can come and go in 5 years.
Well, 5 years? How about 1 or 2? How about, you know, the executive chef from the changing of the guard at Gilt in 8 months?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a perfect example. They were ready to give Gilt 2 stars, and then they got wind, before they went to press that there was going to be a change of the guard, so Gilt was removed from the guide.
And the way it works in Europe, I mean, when you look at these restaurants, you'll hear about, you know, when Alain Ducasse was coming up, he's like, oh, he got 1 star this year, maybe in a year or two he'll get 2 stars, and then maybe in a year or two he'll get 3 stars. You don't even talk in terms of that with American restaurants. Like,
you can't, because the restaurant might not even be open the next year.
Or the chef won't be the same.
And then it's truly the case. So that's the number one problem that Michelin has to wrap their arms around is this concept of the time, the lifespan of a restaurant, of an American restaurant. And that goes to sort of everything they do. So their inspection process is supposed to be 8 to 12 visits. The time that it takes you to review, and actually, which brings the next criteria, is the sheer number of restaurants in New York.
All right. Well, guys, we are now 45 minutes into the show. Our first question was, does Michelin matter? Why don't we see if we can get to the answer of that question.
Does Michelin matter? I don't think Michelin matters for New York, do you?
I think that it matters. I think it matters the different constituents. It matters. I think it matters to chefs and restaurateurs. I think it matters to Japanese tourists. and I don't think it matters to anybody else.
We're going to come back in a moment and talk about the kind of restaurant reviews that maybe do matter more in New York and in the United States in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on Nine is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on Nine supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on Nine has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightsonnine.com. That's lightsonthenumber9.com.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Stage left of Catherine Lombardi. Our guest is Antoinette Bruno of StarChefs.com, and we're talking about restaurant reviews. We've come to the conclusion that for most consumers in New York, this Michelin guy doesn't really matter like it matters in Europe. And one of the things we talked about was, you know, Michelin takes 8 visits and a year to come up with something, and they're sort of predicated on this idea of a restaurant industry where, like, some chef owner will have this restaurant and work for his increasing stars.
For 35 years, right.
Or for 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas the great chefs of New York, they open this one, they open that one, they open 2 more in Vegas, and then they're closed or they're out of business and they change around.
Or the chef moves and the sous chef moves up and it's a whole different cuisine.
Well,
and it happens very fast.
I just wonder, I don't want to say just because you're on StarChefs.com, if there's a medium that perhaps could be more current than a hardbound book that comes out every year. How important are... Now, we know the New York Times comes out every week, but that's one review a week.
Right.
And,
you're
not going to get re-reviewed probably for years.
And Zagat only updates their scores every year, or if you're out of the major metropolitan market, every 2 years. How important are constantly updated things like CitySearch.com, the AOL reviews of restaurants, you know, Star Chefs?
Well, we don't review restaurants.
I know.
Well, I'll take us out of the list. But
yes.
I think basically what's happening is that people are using Zagat as a tool for location, telephone number, you know, basically as more of a contact list than they are for their ratings. And I know that I pick it up constantly when I'm, you know, trying to, especially when I'm looking for a restaurant in a specific neighborhood. It's a great information source for me to quickly figure out where it is I want to go. And it doesn't matter what city I'm in, it is kind of the first book I reach for.
But I do think tourists, and I'll tell you, just being a restaurant owner, a lot of people say, oh, I saw you in Zagat's. I mean, if you're from out of town, I think it's the number one used document.
I mean, 75% of the people who answered our Michelin survey said that Zagat's was the first guy they reached for.
Well, and also Zagat is tremendous in that it's sort of cross-indexed in different ways. Like,
right.
Restaurants in this neighborhood, restaurants with fireplaces, restaurants
right.
that are kid-friendly, restaurants that serve late.
The indices are fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what makes
tremendous.
The book. I mean, whoever came up with the idea of the cross-indices was a great idea.
Well, even Zagat, though, is a year out. With the advent of City Search,
Yeah, but I don't read the reviews in Zagat.
Right.
I mean, what real foodie does?
I think that you do if you're going to a city. And the thing is, look, going to a restaurant...
I would pull up that city's magazine. I would pull up, you know, if I were coming to New York, I'd pull up New York Magazine. You know, if I was coming to Washington, I'd pull up, you know, the Washingtonian. If I was going to Boston, I'd pull up Boston Magazine.
No, I tell you...
I don't think most people take that much time.
And I'll do two things. I will use Zagat. And Zagat will never find you the trendiest, coolest, most current because it can't.
Right,
because
it's out of date, which is why I don't pull it up.
Yeah, but you know what?
But you're trendy and cool and in date.
But if you're coming to Manhattan and you don't know what the local New York restaurants magazines are, what's good and what's bad, because there's a lot of schlocky magazines out there that give you bad information, you go to Zagat, it's going to say number one restaurant Gramercy Tavern, number two restaurant Union Square. That's not a bad recommendation.
But remember, it's a popularity contest.
Yes.
That's what the masses feel the number one restaurant.
Yes.
But I'm not a masses person.
Yes, I was Catholic.
And you aren't either.
I was Catholic, and then I'm not anymore.
Except Zagat gives us really good reviews, so
I mean,
we really like it.
Blogs I think have really, taken us to a whole nother level.
Well, let's talk about blogs in one second, because I agree with you about blogs. But what about City Search? I think City Search is super important. When I'm looking for something
current...
It's a
level below Zagat's.
It's a level below Zagat's.
Oh, sure. I mean, at least in Zagat's, you have people that dine out on a regular basis. City Search is an average of the, 20-something-year-olds.
Okay.
Who don't know anything about food.
Okay.
Just read some of the comments. Really think it tells you anything about food?
Well,
it's more about the hip and trendy places, isn't
true.
It?
True. Well, it is, but I think there are some... When I read the reviews, I can usually... The intelligence of the person writing the review is betrayed by what they write, so I discount the people drinking the green martinis. But I'll be honest with you. I use City Search a lot. But let's talk about blogs, because the blogosphere is really where you can find somebody intelligent that you trust in any city, and, like, eGullet.com is a great forum for people to come and trade information. How is the blogosphere affecting actual people going to restaurants? Is it moving the needle?
I think it is, and I think in a certain segment. Okay, you have to divide diners into groups. So you have what I call maybe the influencer diners, mm-hmm. at the very top of the pyramid, and then you maybe have sort of the foodies, and then underneath the foodies you have sort of the average. Diner that goes out, once or twice a week, sort of the masses, and then you have everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the blogs are where somebody is truly a foodie or influencer, so from the real tip of the pyramid, and I do think what they do affects the way everybody else looks at dining.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's a good word you use, the influencers, because they're the people that you're like, I'm going to Chicago and I gotta go out to dinner. Yeah, I'm gonna call Mary. She knows restaurants. Mm-hmm. She'll know where to go.
Right.
And
the mavens.
Yeah. And I think
a great book a while back called The Tipping Point about what kind of makes trends happen, and we all have those people in our lives, the mavens, the people you go to for the answers.
I mean, if you're coming to New York and if you're in these top tier groups, this influencer group or the foodie group, you're probably going to log on to Chowhound, or you're probably going to log on to thestrongbuzz.com.
Yeah, we're going to talk about where to send you on the web to find good information about New York in just a moment. We're talking with Antoinette Bruno of starchefs.com. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest is Antoinette Bruno of StarChefs.com, and we were talking about, if you really want to be in the know, if you were coming to, say, New York, where we are, or around here where we are, what blogs you would log on to. And Antoinette, you mentioned The Strong Buzz, which is, you can subscribe to the newsletter. It's great. Andrea Strong's been on our show before.
She's really very knowledgeable.
She's of the moment, man. Mm, she finds the good stuff, and she will tell you about stuff before.
She's also very positive.
Yep.
That's another, everything's very positive on there.
Well, but I also feel that she doesn't just,
she's not sugarcoating it.
She's just really cool and knows where the cool places are and goes
right.
And finds them and writes about them. But what other blogs would you say? Chowhound.com?
Chowhound. Mm-hmm. And I also like to read the New York Times. I think that ever since he started his blog, Frank Bruni started his Diner's
Journal.
Yeah,
it's really good.
I think that's really good, too. And then there's a brand new one, which is Michael Ruhlman, which is more of a...
Also a former guest on our show.
He's terrific.
More of a chef blog, mm-hmm. but I think that's great. But I know when I'm researching a new city, we're just having DC Rising Stars, the first thing I did was look at, okay, what are the blogs in DC? And then the first one I found is, The List, Are You On It? Nikki Nellis. And
mm-hmm.
that was the first thing I did in that city was go to look at the blogs and see what people were saying.
I will tell you that one of the interesting things about going in the blogosphere, and Frank Bruni, who's the New York Times restaurant critic, has a blog on the Times site as well, and he'll write about his experiences, and it is a true blog. He writes all the time and updates it all the time about the different places he goes that you'll never read about in the New York Times. My favorite of late was on Frank Bruni's blog. I don't know if you saw this. He reviewed Hooters.
A while ago, actually.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
No, what did he say?
Yeah, well, he thought the uniforms were great, and he thought it was kind of silly, but he was actually surprised that the junk food wasn't half bad.
And he was more surprised at how nice everybody was.
And they said they were very, very nice, and the uniforms were nice. That's all you have. That's all we got. All right, well, Antoinette, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us on the show. You've been great, as always.
Very fun, Antoinette. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to check back with Antoinette from time to time. She's what you call a regular. She's our regular reporter. Her website is called starchefs.com. It's regular commentary on the restaurant business, as well as if you're in the business, and so many of you who are listening to our show are in the business, it's a great resource from job finders to, you know, books that you should be reading to seeing what's going on in the industry. You want to be a restaurant insider, you've got to read starchefs. You've got to sign on to starchefs.com and get the newsletters. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.